freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Missed you guys. Good to be back.
Yeah,
with
boys
you.
Are back in town. The boys are,
boys
back,
are
in
back again.
The boys are back again. The boys are back again.
One of my favorite Brock Heward moments when we relaunched this show in 2014 with the boys back again.
The boys back again.
Well, the boys of October were out there yesterday.
Boys are back in town. Boys are back again.
The boys are back in gear?
Let's hear it for the boys.
Oh, man.
Let's hear it for the boy.
Brock.
My next song is back in town.
The boys of October.
Sorry, my bad. This is going to be a delirious day.
Why?
Been like no sleep the last 2 days. Just been. Yeah.
You took a day off. Why do you have no sleep?
I don't take a day off. I don't even know what that means.
Did you come to work yesterday and wake up at 5 in the morning?
I woke up at 4:30 in the morning.
Yesterday?
Sure.
Why?
I got stuff to do. Lots of work.
You don't have that much to do.
Yes.
Do not have that much to do.
Oh, I do have lots.
That's a lot.
He does. He does.
Yes, no, do. You don't. That's yes. not true.
Okay.
You don't have that much.
He's the real Mr. Unlimited.
That is wrong. You have time to sleep.
No,
I know you and I know what you do and you have time to sleep. You made some choices that forced you
all
to
right,
do that.
Okay.
Did you watch any of the baseball game last night?
You best believe I did.
So you're watching these games the last couple of nights. I watched last night at home. I watched the other wild card game.
The
first
game,
at a sportsbook, then
game?
At a restaurant, then at the tables playing blackjack. It was great. Had like three completely different viewing experiences of that game.
Yes.
You watch game 163. You watch game 162 and all these games that matter. For all these good teams in baseball. You come away thinking the Mariners are even close
no,
to them?
No,
they're not even in the same league.
No. No, the only thought I have in my mind is, and really, since you blew up last week, it is good to great. It's Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. How do I get from good to great? And the Mariners are good, Mike. Yeah. Over the course of the season, and thumbs up baseball and all the fun, and Eddie Diaz, there's a lot of, you know, and some of them, there's a couple great players on the team. But by and large, they're good. And now you're watching just greatness. You're watching the difference of it. And frankly, it feels a little bit like the team that's coming in Sunday to CenturyLink Field. That's greatness right now. That's the bar. That is where they set it. And when they thumped you last year and it was 34-0 at halftime, it was a pretty clear decision. I think from everybody and every decision maker with the Seahawks that, you know, things got to change. It wasn't looking at, oh, well, this kick here or that kick. Nope, it was we're not good enough. We're not good enough. And this team is on the horizon of great, and how do we get there? And I think that really led to a lot of their decision-making.
Yeah, I want to get to the Seahawks portion of this for a moment. I just want to start for a second here on the map. You're not in that category. If you had had a 500 season in the second half and then gone into that game against the Yankees instead of the A's, mm-hmm. if it had been you instead of Oakland last night, anybody think that game would have gone any differently?
No.
Does anyone on the planet think that this Mariners team goes out there and does better than Oakland did yesterday?
There's I mean, no it's chance. Just it's just baseball. None. It is just baseball. So on any given night in baseball, you don't know. But ultimately, when you watch Severino throw 100 and you watch Betances come in,
oh,
and
look, you
watch
finally Judge, got a shot. Maybe they no, it's just Betances coming
and
in.
And you don't even know who is going to start for you. Like, you wouldn't have even shaped conversations at the end of the month of, okay, well, we've got to have who do you want ready in that game last
night? Who's going to start? Who's going to get a hit? Who on the Mariners gets a hit last night? Brock, it just reinforced to me what I strongly believe, and I heard some of the DePoto sound from the other day, and I don't know what he's talking about.
Sequencing.
Honestly, I don't know what Jerry's talking about. When I read through what he had to say,
yes.
I don't know what he's talking about. That the team just got what they got unlucky. You didn't get unlucky, Jerry. You didn't get unlucky. Mm-mm. Things didn't just go like you weren't as good. You weren't as good as the other teams. And spare me this average thing. No.
Since 2016, we've had the fifth best record in the American League. We are trapped behind four teams that have had extraordinary success, and we've not been able to get over that last hump.
I've got an idea. Here's a thought. Get untrapped. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Control your own destiny instead of relying on what four other teams. What, you're going to wait for the Yankees to get bad? Let's just, hey, I got an idea. Play me the 60 minutes clock We're just going to sit here and wait for the Yankees to get bad.
Did the 97-win thing also irritate you? Because that's the same vein. Like, oh, well, it's probably a consolation prize that would have taken 97 wins for us to get into this.
Salk didn't hear that clip.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Now I'm just adding to it.
I must have missed that one.
If we'd have known that 97 was the goal, I mean, that's wholly unrealistic.
Oh, wow. Then obviously we wouldn't have done it. Good. 97's the new goal. Blow it up. Get unstuck. If you're stuck between the Red Sox or behind the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Astros and maybe the Indians, maybe the A's, how about get unstuck? And sometimes in order to free yourself, you might need to gnaw off your leg. You might need to gnaw off something and then like let it regenerate. But don't tell me you're stuck. You're not stuck. Get unstuck. You control your own destiny.
Was Oakland building to this or Oakland just tinker? Did Oakland get to 97, 98 wins this year? Because they had a couple good young pieces. Chapman's a good player. Chris Davis is a good player. And you've got a couple good pieces. Edwin Diaz and Mitch Haniger. And then they just kind of tinkered. And tinkered here and tinkered there and added this reliever here and added that reliever there and added that bat there and was created
and
there.
And Oakland did that with an incredible young nucleus, as it turns out. With a young nucleus of hitters and some incredible
bullpen.
Luck along the way.
Bullpen.
But I mean, they built it with a great bullpen. They traded for the right guys in their pen. I didn't all serve them perfectly last night.
Yep.
But they have a great young nucleus of stars.
By the way,
Brock, it's still not enough.
Correct.
Because the A's are not in the same caliber with the Astros, Yankees, and Red Sox.
Nope.
They're not. And
nope.
By the way, I don't think the Indians are either. That doesn't mean that you can't win because weird, fluky things happen. But the A's, Red Sox, and Yankees are in a completely different caliber than those teams.
Yep.
And you're not in that. So if the goal is to get into that caliber, well, what do those teams have? Unbelievable farm systems spitting out prospects that are part of their organization. They have big-time superstars. They show up in the big moments.
Yep.
What do you have? Robinson Cano, who wouldn't have been allowed to play last night? Nelson Cruz, who looks like he's on his way out of town, and a nucleus of secondary players that are good in Mitch Haniger. And a few, those guys are good players. But don't tell me they're in the same league as those other guys. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not in the same league as that. You don't have Dylan Betances and Chapman, everybody else. You got one guy in your bullpen you trust, maybe two.
Torres, Stanton, Judge.
You don't have young prospect after young prospect that you drafted and developed or signed and developed that are all on their way up together.
Yep.
You got Robinson Cano and D. Gordon fighting in the clubhouse.
Yep.
Or Gene Segura and D. Gordon. I mean, it's just not the same.
So
watching it over the last few days does nothing. When the Rockies and Cubs needed to win to make sure that they got into the next, what'd they do? They beat them 7-0 and 14, just dominated the bad teams in those spots. What'd you do? You got swept by Toronto.
By the Padres.
And the Padres.
Yeah. You're not good. Yeah, you're not great. So what do you want to be? Do you want to just be good? Do you want to just tinker there and be good? Or do you want the opportunity to be great? And Kyle referenced this sound earlier in the week. I think it was a Monday or maybe the end of last week as things went down. And it was that sound of John Schneider. And this was from the combine. This was after last season. By the way, a season that went 9-7. That had a lot of comps, frankly, to the Mariners season of this year. It was 9-7, had some stretches where you're like, oh, man, you're going to make the playoffs. Oh, man, you got the MVP of the league. But ultimately, the Rams kicked your teeth in 34-0 at halftime in last December. And it's why John Schneider looked at a 9-7 team and realized he wasn't close.
We're pretty disappointed the way the season ended, you know. You know, we went 9-7, and, you know, you would have thought that we won two games. You know, it's a pit that sits in your stomach and really fuels you, and we're excited about the challenges ahead because we want to, you know, we feel like we want to get rolling on this thing.
We're not sequencing field goals. And Blair Walsh making 70% of them. And, you know, kickers make 90%. Or even if he makes 85%, we still would have won 11 games. No. When we played the best and we lined up against the Rams, it was Todd Gurley before halftime that did this.
Gurley does get it, goes left side, has some running room, and he's going to go for the first down. He's going to go all the way for a touchdown. Are you kidding me? 57 yards on a third down and 20. And Todd Gurley to the house.
Yeah, it was a butt whooping and led some guys afterwards to really question where the Seahawks were at heart-wise, talent-wise. Ryan Clark was on TV just destroying them.
I'm not saying they quit, but I want you to go back and watch that Todd Gurley 3rd and 20 play. Mm-hmm. And I want you to start circling people and saying, it's dude hustling. It's dude hustling. Is he trying to get to the ball?
Yeah.
That team was done. That team was fighting with each other. They were get your name out my mouth.
See,
after
it's really
that
hard for me to explain to you because this is something I haven't seen us do and didn't play that far off.
And they made wholesale changes because they needed to be great. And the team that's rolling in here Sunday, that Rams team, they're great. and you're going to get to measure and see just how close you are in your rebuild.
Need to know the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Earl Thomas with Earl Thomas officially on injured reserve yesterday. Seahawks added a couple of free agent safeties to their roster. Mo Alexander, who was released by the team in September, and TJ Green, who apparently is a former second-round pick by the Colts, will both enter this Seahawks team, and we'll see what they have. I think one of the things that you're going to see here, Brock, is that the big nickel may not be as popular anymore. Can they still go big nickel without Earl Thomas? They love the big nickel this year. He won't say it out loud.
Yeah.
He keeps calling it some sort of a dime package.
Right.
But it's a big nickel, whether he wants to call it that or not. I don't know what they're going to do without Earl Thomas. No ability to do the big nickel.
Yeah, it's a pretty mixed bag when you look at the injury report yesterday, because it looks like Deion Jordan's going to be able to play. And you're going to certainly need his presence. It looks like Ethan Posick at least is going to add depth. And I don't expect him to make changes. But he should be active and available come Sunday. And just continues to be the question mark is KJ Wright. I mean, we want to play some sound. We can play Coach Carroll after having a little knee scope in Minnesota, saying, well, we don't know if he's going to be ready for the opener in a couple weeks. He's a quick healer, and then all of a sudden it's week one, week two, week three, week five. Now, you do have the Raiders week six in London. My hunch is that at this point they just said, hey, let's get to the bye. Let's give you a whole month here, and let's make sure after that bye week you can hit the ground running. And with that absence and with Kendrick's absence, that means we could see a little Shaquem. And I think we'll have to see Mo Alexander off the streets and active 7 days later.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the Yankees beat the A's 7-2 in last night's AL wildcard game. Sets up a playoff matchup between the Red Sox and Yankees for the first time in 14 years. First time they've ever met in the divisional round in a five-game series. But I just watched that game last night and thought the Mariners would not have fared any better than the A's. If they had, you know, if the A's hadn't gone on a historic run and the Mariners had even just played 500 ball, how would they have handled that? Well, based on what I saw, the pitching that the Yankees threw out there, I don't think they would have handled it very well. Based on the offense that I watched this year from the Mariners, for the most part, I don't think they would have handled it very well. I don't think they were at that level. I don't think they're there with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros. And those are the three teams that I expect to be competing here when this is all said and done. So, you know, I'll say it before and I'll say it again. I really would love to see Jerry be bold. Be incredibly bold this offseason. That may mean trading some of your young core for young prospects, or it means going out and spending a tremendous amount of money to make sure that you are right there with the Yankees, Red Sox, and Astros. But the way you're at right now is a recipe for mediocrity.
Yeah, you're betwixt and between, and that's never a spot you ever want to be in any sport, and certainly that baseball one where it can feel like it takes forever to turn that ship around. You know, the Cubs lose. I think Major League Baseball, they can never admit this publicly, was certainly hoping that the Yankees would not do the same. And they did not. And they took care of business. And kind of fun to see a manager come out of the broadcast booth calling that game just 1 year earlier in Aaron Boone and now running the show. So many young stars. And by the way, a little bit of class. Aaron Judge, I know it's hard to say a Yankee is classy, but Aaron Judge about as classy as it's going to get. And that's going to be one terrific matchup with the best team in baseball.
He's probably a jerk.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Seattle's about to get an NHL team because the Oakview Group has delivered, Brock, on every single promise they have made so far. I was so bummed that I wasn't on the air here over the last couple of days to talk about this, but it's incredibly exciting news, man. It has just been awesome the way this whole thing has gone down. Here's where I'm at right now. I'm not concerned about the quality of the building. I am not concerned with traffic. I know I may be the only one, but I'm not. I am not concerned with the NBA's interest. I believe they are interested and will want to play in this building with this ownership group. I am concerned about parking. I think that's going to be a problem in that building. And I don't know yet how to feel about the quality of the franchise. What will this hockey team actually look like? And will they be a team obsessed with winning and all the rest? But I do know that Todd Lywicki is the guy I'd want to run it and choose all of that. Well, so I am I'm over the moon right now.
Well, I'll add a couple what I know and what I don't know. And what I know is I'm going to be paying more attention to the NHL than I ever have in my life. I know as they began their regular season, the Capitals, the defending champs, routed their opponent 5-0, that I'm going to start to get to know these organizations. I'm going to start to get to know these names. And I know that Todd Lywicki's track record and his resume is the best in professional sports. Whether it was here in Seattle, whether it was in Tampa, whether it was in Minnesota, whether it was on Park Avenue, there's nobody that brings the resume to the job that he does at the level of success. And in that, I am awfully excited.
All right, there you go. Those three things you need to know every single morning right at 7:10. You can also listen to the show on the 7:10 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Talk a little bit more hockey coming up in 15 minutes and some of the excitement level of where we're at. For me, it's pretty well somewhere near like 12 and 15 on a 10-point scale, I would say. First, though, let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
How are we doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Michael Kendrick suspended. How long do you think the suspension is going
to
be, by the way?
Hard to tell. I mean, it even goes, it just went, because a lot of times when they say it's like 1 year, they'll just say indefinite, but they'll usually put some indication. But I know on Tuesday's waiver wire, they didn't have any indication at all. I mean, is it player conduct? I mean, that would be six games. Is it anything else? And so there's a mystery to that. I'm sure Michael Kendricks has an idea, but he hasn't maybe got it back to the team. But I mean, it could be 6 weeks. It could be the rest of the season.
What am I missing here? That what Michael Kendricks did is worse than what so many other guys in the NFL have done? What am I missing? It's insider trading. It's a victimless crime. Yeah, I'm not saying you should do it. And I understand he's going to serve a penalty for it. But it's a victimless crime, whereas there are so many NFL players that have had crimes with real significant victims and have served less time than that.
Yeah, but a crime's a crime, and there has
but
to
certainly,
be some punishment
no, a
to
crime
it.
Is not a crime. Crime. I didn't say it shouldn't have punishment, but all crimes are not created equal, certainly, right?
Right.
I mean, you drive down the I-90 bridge and you do 80, that's not the same as going out and killing somebody, right?
No, that's right.
And I would say that this crime is closer to doing 80 than killing somebody. And yet, we see Ben Roethlisberger come back and plenty of other players after not that much time.
Yeah, it's one, because again, this is the first time there's been an insider trading type of penalty like this, and so there's no precedent, there's nothing to compare it to, and again, we still don't know the details of it. So
do you think it is just because he's facing this legitimate jail time that the NFL and Park Avenue says, you know what, we can't let a guy play that's going to go to the slammer here in a couple months? Do you think there's just this fear of that that's overriding this decision?
Could be part of it. I mean, remember, we're in the court of Roger Goodell, not the court of law. And so emotions plays into it. Public sentiment plays into it. And so, when the comparisons never do jive, and when you try to figure them out, that's when you're usually coming out wrong, because some that you think would be longer come out shorter. Some that are shorter come out longer. In this case, it's just a mystery.
You know, while Earl was the one that everybody focused on because Earl held out and Earl wanted his money and Earl felt like he earned a lot more, I think you could make a similar conversation for KJ Wright coming into this season, that he's played at a Pro Bowl caliber, he's been available, he's been there, he's been a great teammate, and yet obviously he did not hold out, but he's now missed, John, what's going to be his fifth game with a knee scope. What is going on?
Well, it's just slow in recovering, and you just don't know sometimes, and I would imagine it's an MCL of some degree, and I don't know what kind of setback there was, but there apparently had to be some kind of a setback, and you kind of get the feeling that what they'll end up doing to give it more time is not have him play the Oakland game over in London, and then have him take the bye week and then try to come back for the seventh game of the season. But that means he does miss six games. And that's where you start to get, where you start to get into third contracts, you get into some worries because, guys are older, they played longer. And of course, with this team, you have to put into the fact that they've almost played a season more than everybody else because of all the playoff games. We saw that with the Buffalo Bills back when they went to four straight Super Bowls. And so, these things catch up, but, they've got to be cautious with it. And unfortunately for KJ, it hurts the team and it hurts him. It also hurts his bargaining power.
What do you see the linebacker and safety rotation looking like during this game?
If they go 90% three receivers, I think what you're going to probably end up seeing is that, I mean, they'll have Austin Calitro out there as the weak side safety in a normal set, and then I think you'll probably see Maurice Alexander out there in a three safety type of set. I think that might be one of the alignments, or again, they might try to go with nickel in that, but I think that you're going to probably see more three safety type of thing, because I think that was the plan that was going to be if they had Earl Thomas. Now Tedrick Thompson has to take over, and now they needed that third guy, and it had to either be Delano Hill, and then they bring back Maurice Alexander. But I think Maurice can do that. And it was interesting. They put him down as a weak side linebacker, Maurice Alexander, even though he's a safety. So I kind of get the idea they may go big nickel.
JC, as you dig into your analytics and database, how good is this Rams offense?
Oh, really good. I mean, absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's almost sick. I mean, you can say it was sick that they were able to add three top studs on defense, but it's almost sicker to think of what Brandon Cooks adds to this offense, because compared to Sammy Watkins, I don't even think it's close. I know Sammy Watkins got $16 million a year to go over to Kansas City, but Cooks has the speed and pass-catching ability and all that to even stretch this offense even more, and you can see Jared Goff's more comfortable with all the motions and all that. It still triggers around Todd Gurley, but now their three-receiver set is just remarkable, and really, as Todd Gurley said, it's almost unstoppable.
You were on the field last year, correct? Sidelines, yep. doing the radio. What do you remember of that game, that beatdown, that 34-0 bloodbath at halftime?
Oh, it was just ugly. I mean, just seeing how the Rams were just kind of, you know, laughing on the sidelines and having such a good time and, you know, enjoying themselves so much. And as that naturally they should. I mean, this is a rival that they had really just destroyed, and everything was working and nothing was being stopped. And so, I mean, it was almost like a 3-hour party.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
When was the last time you went swimming?
Ooh, I would have to say it would have to be maybe 15. Well, I don't know. I guess you could say a little bit if you get in the. It's not swimming, I guess, if you go into the ocean. So I haven't been to the ocean now for 3 years. So I'd have to go back maybe about 15 years to say the last time I put on a water, put on a suit and kind of dumped in the water and swam.
Can I just ask a question? Why isn't it swimming if you go in the ocean?
I don't know. I mean, because again, it's like you're not getting your arms off and paddling.
Oh, so
I
mean, you just mean like kind of
yeah,
walking.
You're just waiting. Yeah, you're just waiting in the water. Oh. I wouldn't call that swimming.
That's fair.
Let's put it this way. I've been in the ocean, but I've never swum in the ocean.
You never have?
Never.
You never just jump in and swim in the waves or ride the waves in or get in the boogie board or anything at all?
I never have.
Why not?
What's that?
Let it go. Have a little fun. Live a little life.
It's just safe.
It's safer, yeah.
I'm with you, John. Yeah. There's no reason to go swimming in the ocean. You look like a seal. Decent chance you're going to get eaten.
I mean, if you go in the ocean, I mean, it's like, okay, fine. You get there and you enjoy what's there. But then next thing you know, if you want to go in the water and swim, you go in the pool.
John, we got
why does he look like
here.
A seal? He didn't look like a seal. He's got long arms.
We all
arms.
Look like seals to a shark. Jeez. All right, John, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right,
there you go. John Clayton with us every single morning.
When you're on a surfboard, your little hands are coming out. Yeah,
like
but not when you've got arms and legs.
You know what? I'm all set.
Kicking and flailing.
I don't need to even really make it
jump
close.
In the waves.
Hey, I'll tell you, you know, the one thing about the Rams is like a lot of these high-powered offenses, right? You're like, well, okay, fine. You look good now, but what's it going to look like in bad weather in the playoffs and this and that?
Mm-hmm.
Rams only play one bad weather game all year.
Yeah.
One bad weather game all year. Start looking at their schedule for the end of the year. Once you get to November, they play in a dome in New Orleans, home in L.A., home in L.A., in a dome in Detroit, at Chicago, bad weather game on December 9th, home against the Eagles, at Arizona, home against the Niners. Mm. That's their November, December. They don't play a single bad weather game. You think the NFL wants football to succeed in L.A.?
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But they play one bad weather game in all of November and December.
I'll tell you
Hey, Tupac! Dusty! Tupac! Obama! Obama! Obama!
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, coming up next, Brock, the excitement level went from 10 to 15, and it's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Gone for the last couple days. Good to be back and chat with all you guys. Phone lines kind of be open, I don't know, kind of throughout the rest of this morning here. Brock, I'm sorry I wasn't around when the news came out on Tuesday afternoon and then into yesterday morning about the NHL and the big announcement. I know it's not 100%. You still got to go through the December 2nd meeting, and then it'll become like 100% official. They will make this announcement and say, you have a team, and here you go. But, I mean, now that you've got the recommendation of the Board of Governors, there really aren't any more steps left. And so I just keep saying, holy cow, we're getting a new pro sports franchise in town.
We have focused for so long. We have focused for so long, even on, you know, this station, you know, and us and everybody. We focus so long on what's wrong, on the bad process, on all the things that isn't. Right? We just nitpick all of the things that are not, instead of now, like the amount of hours and angst that we spend and reporters that we brought on that read things in their paper and all of the stuff that we did, right? And largely focusing on and nitpicking the things that the city is not, that the sports landscape is not. And now we have a chance to truly celebrate something that is.
Oh, and it's going to be, we're going to have a winter sport again. Now, I know it's not the NBA, which this town obviously has a long relationship with, and that's still a goal out there for the future. I'm not, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the people for whom that is still the number one goal, and that's fine. But we are about to get a winter sports franchise, and I know this isn't a one-horse town where all of a sudden we're getting our first team, and we can't believe, oh, my God, we're finally getting a team. It's not like that, but it is a winter sport, and it is so fun to watch. Yep. It is so fun to attend. It is so fun to talk about, and contrary to what I've heard from some other folks, I think it's a really fun sport to watch on TV. I know there are those out there saying, oh, it's only good live. And it's a good TV product, too. That story was true 20 years ago before HD. And when HD came around in the late 90s into the early 2000s, it did more for hockey, in my opinion, than any other sport. Hockey just looks great.
Yeah.
You can follow the puck easier. All of the things that were sort of problems went away. And by the way, hockey may have the single best play-by-play announcer in the game in Doc Emmerich.
Nate Schmidt rushes it back ahead. 3.25 to go in the third period. That's slowed down by Fleury, taken by Ovechkin. Ovechkin led it back across, and there's shot by Schmidt. Saved by Fleury. Scrambled there in front. Still a big pileup. The puck is still loose underneath of one of the Penguins players. Still they're battling for it. And we get Ahal to play. Not yet. It's loose, and a shot by Carlson. It's saved by Fleury. He's without a stick. He makes another save. It's still another save. In play. It stopped.
Emmerich's great, and wow. just gives you the
energy.
It may
energy. Have the best sound.
It does, too.
It, the puck on yes. the stick, the bodies
blades
in the boards, the blades
steel.
On the ice.
If you ever get a chance to, and I saw that they're going to be making the announcement, maybe even as soon as Monday is where the practice facility is going to be, you ever get to watch a hockey practice, it's quiet in the building, and you just hear really crisp the sound of the skates on the ice, the puck hitting the tape of the stick. It does have some really great sounds, Brock. You'll like it, and it's got some fighting, too.
So now they're going to fight at center ice. Wilson and Colburn right out of the box. Wilson with a right. His helmet is off. They're throwing rights. Wilson and trying to come back as Colburn. Wilson throwing a right and then Colburn. The helmets are off.
And you can hear some people banging on the
glass.
Yeah,
it's like clicking going on.
I don't know what that was. Regardless, man, hockey is a really fun sport. Now, I grew up watching it on TV. The guy I grew up watching, the announcers do matter, by the way, I think, in hockey.
You've said that before. I think you even said that to Todd Lewicki.
The way they will bring the sport to you. I didn't play the sport as a kid or really ever. I don't skate well or anything. But in watching really great play-by-play and color commentators, you know, I feel like I gained an understanding of it. Not as good as somebody who had played and really mm-hmm. understands the intricate details. But between Derek Sanderson and Andy Brickley, who I grew up listening to, those two guys, first one, then the other, doing color. And Fred Cusick, who was the play-by-play guy when I was a kid in Boston. He is probably my favorite play-by-play man of anyone ever.
Orr fights to keep it in. Does. Has it in the corner to Sanderson. Back in front. Orr. Shot. Scores!
That's way
early.
That's real early, Fred Cusick. That's like 60s, maybe early. That's, what, 72?
Is that
72.
Before your time?
That's 72, I 72. Think, Fred Cusick.
So Mike was just a wee lad.
That's Fred really a long time ago. But, you know, look.
It feels like it's a mixture of so many things that that our sports landscape loves. Honestly, listen to that sound like the hydroplanes. Right? And our city has loved that for decades. There's fighting. It sounds like football. There's aspects of it that look like basketball. There's a speed. There's an intense intensity. There's something, and the Sounders have done this, and they have captured, I think, their fan base and just kind of captivated their sports community here by making that venue so unique.
Yeah.
And I would think, and you know, I just have been to a couple games, one up in Vancouver, the one with you and Kyle down in Phoenix. And hockey just has such a different energy in the building. It's yeah. cold. Like, you know, you're so used to everything being in every other sport that you watch.
You're inside
yes,
and cold.
Yes. But every other sport, you're used to, like, your blood's flowing, you're sweating, and especially, and Titus is going tomorrow night to the basketball game with his buddies. I said, bro, it doesn't matter where you sit. There's going to be like 19,000 people. You'll feel all the energy and everything. In hockey, you're ready. You're just like amped up. You're frothing at the mouth for them with the intensity, and yet it's cold in the arena, which was so unique to me and so different than anything else.
Let me ask you guys a couple of questions. How do you, for those people who aren't familiar with the game, how do you want to learn about it? I was like, what if you're excited about hockey, if you're one of the 32,000 who threw down their money and said, okay, I want season tickets. I know that all 32,000 are not hockey fans who understand the game. How do you want to learn it? Like, what's your plan here in 2 years? It's going to be essentially 2 years from this month. What's your plan to get ready? Are you going to watch Canucks games and sort of work up a hatred for the Canucks? Mm. Are you going to read Wikipedia to understand the rules? Are you going to play NHL 95 or maybe a newer version of
also a great way. You can learn a lot of the players and the teams.
Absolutely. Like, what's the plan out there? You can text us, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. What's your plan to learn hockey?
I got two things.
Okay.
And Kyle, and boy, howdy, Lydia, to some degree, but certainly I'm talking to you, Kyle, since you just hate 80s and 90s movies. Like, you just think it is just child's play and silly.
Or really all movies, yeah, but go
you,
on.
But you really look down on this. I don't know. Are you going to pick up a video game? Are video games of the 90s or 2000s cool? Like Blades,
I really
of,
like this
Blades
fantasy
of Steel
hockey.
Won't teach you hockey.
Blades of Steel was
but
one
it
of the
won't actually teach you hockey.
Video games.
I get that.
Ever.
I'm going to watch Miracle every week, boys.
Connect the pass. Connect the pass.
Yes.
But how are you going to
That's one. I'm going to play Blades of Steel. Okay. Number two, I'm going to ask for Lydia poetry. I'm going to ask her to write some poetry over the course of the NHL season that just kind of helps us teach the characters, the drama, the storylines. Like, oh. Oh. Steve Yzerman. Best ever. Wasn't he on that game? The YZ?
Nobody's on that game. It's Blades of Steel. There's no real players.
What was it,
I think
NHL?
He played three on three.
What was the next one up from that?
Not NHL 95.
There you go.
Which is what I said a few minutes ago.
So good, too.
92.
The Zamboni coming on the ice.
How do you actually plan to learn about it?
Those are my two methods.
I don't think that's going to teach you very much. I appreciate the goal. I don't know whether it's actually going to teach you.
I'm
going to
be watching. I'm going to be talking to Barry Melrose. I'm going to be talking to Steve Levy.
Will you go to some Silver Tips or Thunderbirds games to try to get yourself ready and kind of understand, build up some of the excitement?
Yeah. To get the atmosphere, but I think watching on TV is going to be helpful. We're going to need that to get some of the color commentary and add that flavor of what exactly is going on.
Who is
I'm not
team?
Watching any stinking Canucks
okay.
games.
Lydia,
Wednesday night rivalry games are a great place to start.
Yeah. Lydia and
NBC
Salt
Sports
know their hockey. All right, huge advantage for us. These two actually legitimately, howdy, Kyle. These two know their hockey and they love it. So who would be the team? Who would be the team to watch as far as the very essence and, like, the best hockey going right
I don't
now?
Know that you need to do it that way. I think I agree with Lydia. You just watch NBC Sports on certainly Wednesday night rivalries.
All right.
But they usually have, what, two or three different games a week? And
yeah, I mean, there's usually the big nights are, well, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, a lot of games. But then Wednesday night rivalries, yeah. You just don't want to miss.
And if you get an opportunity, usually the late game, they'll throw the late games on at 7 o'clock, the West Coast games. And those are the teams that we're going to need to get to know. You're going to need to get to know Calgary and Edmonton. Edmonton's real good. They got a lot of good young players. Obviously, you got to get to know Vancouver, San Jose,
LA.
You know, Tampa
Vegas,
Bay might be an interesting one for you to get to know just because of the history of this management group and what they've done there. And you can kind of see how they've built a team there. And they're just a fun team to watch anyway.
Well, that's
really good
because that's the only NHL game I've ever seen is a Lightning game.
Perfect. Well, then you're all set.
Am I misremembering or did we take a call like 6 months ago or something? Remember? I think, Lydia, you really liked this call, too. It was a guy that talked about coming home. And I think it was maybe before Wednesday Night Robbery, and his wife was there, like, with a projector, and she already had, like, two beers deep or something.
Yeah,
you remember
I think
that?
It was during the Stanley
Cup. Girl crush.
Yes. And he was like, so great. Wife had the beer ready for me when I walked in. She was already too
she
deep.
She didn't wait for me? Yes. Yeah, it was like, great. She's already one game in. I got home late.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, what can we do for you guys? If you are not already a hockey fan, what can we do for you to help out? How where's that nexus point where we can sort of help you guys understand and be excited if you're not already or if you're excited but don't really know why? Like, what can we do to help? Because I'm so excited about this, honestly. Text messages, Saul, could you narrate something similar to Ram Rules to help us understand hockey better? No. No, I don't think we're going to do Ram Rules.
I think one of the beauties here, and I'll make this quick because I know we got to run, is you've got in Todd Lewicki, as far as a management team, he has such a grasp of this area. He knows it. He knew what the Seahawks needed. They needed to reconnect with the 12s. They needed that community to come back, a community that was there, was burgeoning, was ready to explode, and he connected it. He knew it. He knows this place. And I can't wait to watch him market. I can't wait to watch him get into the public sector. I can't wait to watch this team and this logo and this mascot.
Yeah.
All of that
stuff. I hope he just does this.
Sack! He's going to go to the nth degree to do it the right way.
All right, coming up next, Coors Light's Blue 42. Who's the one Seahawk whose time and opportunity may be running out? Brock's got that answer next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue
42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Boo 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Boo 42! Boo 42!
All right, we continue on here. Hope everybody's having a good morning. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. And hey, we're going to talk to someone new today. I know it's a little ways off, but at 9 o'clock this morning, Kevin Clark's going to join us from The Ringer. Kevin is an awesome writer. Every time he writes something, I swear it's the most interesting thing I've read in a week. He's just a really, really good writer, so I'm excited to talk to him at 9 o'clock. I also got to tell you guys, and I've been a little remiss on this before we get to your Blue 42 questions, Brock, that we're giving away tickets through our Seahawks code word contest, okay? So, pretty simple. I'm going to give you a code word here, and you got about, I don't know, 12 more minutes to go enter. The code word is BLOCK, B-L-O-C-K, BLOCK. And what you got to do is go to 710sports.com/win, enter the code word BLOCK by the end of the hour, and you'll be entered to win two tickets to see the Hawks host the Rams this Sunday at CenturyLink Field.
Yep.
The code word expires, though, at 8 o'clock. However, I'll give you another code word right after that. So for the 8 o'clock hour, there'll be a new one. But right now, go enter BLOCK at 710sports.com/win. You can find all the details and rules there as well. Brock, question number one for you.
Yes, sir.
Is Brandon Marshall's time and opportunity running out?
Yeah.
Because he keeps dropping the ball.
Well, you know, veteran players is something that Pete just doesn't keep around forever if they're just not doing their job, that he wants to go young. That he's going to give other guys opportunities, and you saw that even in that game last week as David Moore got in the mix more and more and more as Brandon Marshall had another drop. We were just looking at his drop rate percentages over the last few years, and right now he's the sixth worst in the league, averaging nearly a drop a game. And that's not unique. I mean, the last couple years he has struggled to catch the ball. Part of that is gaining enough separation and having air is difficult. I mean, everything, you know, he's got to feel like someone, because they are, is just on his back with nearly every single play. Coach Carroll yesterday addressing it and talking about how they're going to get Brandon Marshall back on track and what they can do to get his game going.
Just got to get him going. You know, he's a couple balls got away from him the last 2 weeks, and got a couple passes broken up. He had a drop last week. We just got to get him going, you know. And like all receivers, they want to get that ball and get rolling, get the feel for it. And it's been a little bit spotty with his opportunities as much as we've been running the football. But potentially in our scheme, we like what he does. We know what he can do, and we want to make sure that he's part of it. So, but meanwhile, we also wanted to see David too, and we've been wanting to get David Moore in there. And David did a nice job. Mm-hmm. We got his chances, so we're mixing the rotations there just to try to use everybody and effectively.
Did you say a little shoddy with his opportunities or a little spotty?
As far as I could tell, they both mean the same thing.
I would
right
disagree
now.
With that. Dallas game, they fed him. He had multiple opportunities after opportunities after opportunities in that first quarter and a half. And then last week, the biggest play of the game, honestly. One of the biggest plays of the game is they go up 7-0 and they get the turnover. And Schottenheimer calls an excellent play, a little play action, and he is wide open on the crossing route coming over and just flat drops it. I mean, he catches that. You're inside the 15-yard line, maybe inside the 10-yard line, and you have a chance to go up at a minimum 10, and at that point possibly 14, change the dynamic. Drops it, sack, negative play, missed field goal. My goodness gracious. He, in this offense, can't afford those kind of drops.
All right, question number two. Rams offense presents a lot of challenges for any defense, but which player on the Seahawks will be most under the gun here?
Bradley McDougal, who's been the best strong safety in the NFL through 4 weeks. He has been arguably the best defensive player for the Seahawks over the first quarter of this season, and it's just the nature of that spot because he's going to have to come up and run support against Todd Gurley. You just know they're going to run their outside zone and inside zone, and he's got to be an unblocked guy. Then you know he's got to cover tight ends. Then you know he's got to cover Bradley McDougal. And then you know he's got to play deep half. And then you know he's going to have to be matched up with some of these guys in the fly sweep action. I mean, there's not a single play with what the Rams do where he can take a breath. Oh, and then on top of it, he's got a new safety that he's got to work in tandem and constantly communicate with in the loudest of venues, hopefully, come Sunday, that the noise continues to pump through there. And a new weak side linebacker that he's going to have to communicate. There's going to be a ton on Bradley McDougal. The good news is he's shown through the first month that he can handle just about everything. This is going to be on steroids with this offense coming in.
All right, question number three. John Clayton said that Earl stands to lose, what, $6 million because of this injury? Is that true?
Yeah, we posed that question. I think it was on Tuesday in your absence. Jake and I asked Clayton just how impactful at Broken Tibia was?
I think probably $7 million a year. Because here's the way I'm looking at it, because with the fact that he's now coming off his second broken leg, that what he's going to have to try to do is take a one-year prove-it type of contract.
Is he? I don't know that he is.
I mean, the market is what the market's willing to bear. Now, I will say this about John. Okay, we can disagree about what's the best thing sometimes to bring to a party. We can disagree about swimming in an ocean. I'll tell you what, when he talks about valuations, and you and I both kind of scoffed at him with the Khalil Mack 2 first-rounders. Who was the last non-quarterback to get 2 first-rounders? Well, you got 2 first-rounders. And when it comes to these numbers, when it comes to his database and the people that he talks to, Mike, in looking at last year and looking at the trends, sure, the market could be outrageous. There could be a team that's got $70 million of cap space that says, forget about it, Cleveland. You know, forget about it. We'll bring him and we'll sign him. And, you know, but there's going to be, I think we could both agree, it's going to have to be incentive rich. You're not going to get the $13 million he wants. He's going to have it incentivized to get to that number. And, you know, that's a tough spot for Earl to be sitting in.
All right, good stuff. Seahawks and Rams, of course, will get it going on Sunday at 1:25 at home. Don't forget, some limited single game tickets for the Hawks 2018 season do remain at Seahawks.com/tickets. All right, speaking of tickets, we do have another shot for you guys to enter with a new code word coming up here in about 10 minutes. We can do a little potpourri, Brock. I want to talk some. This Michael Kendricks thing has me completely turned around. And I want to talk a little bit more about him as part of potpourri next here on Brock and Salk.